Today is a glorious day, the day that we each have designed to fulfill our heart's desire. This is December 17th, 1999, Friday at the Absolute Monastery. And our topic today is lifestyles. One word, lifestyles. And to begin our thinking in that direction, let's sing this wonderful song to the tune of Auld Lang Syne that gets us one pointed in the direction we're going. I do for others what I would have others do for me. I do for others what I would have others do for me. I do for others what I would have others do for me. I do for others what I would have others do for me. You see, we live in a self-centered world. We live in a world that revolves around us, revolves around everything we do. We think that we're living in a community that is working harmoniously together, and we're not. We're working harmoniously with ourselves. We're working harmoniously with our own ideals, with our own direction, with our own goals, and it has nothing to do with our neighbor or anyone else. Our song tells us that, I do for others what I would have others do for me. I don't do for others what I would have others do. I do for others what I would have others do for me, because that is the most important thing. The most important thing is where I stand in life. In the Reader's Digest this month, there's an article about a man who, I didn't read the article, but I just read the little blurb about it. He apparently lost someone dear, and this made a very deep impression upon him. But that wasn't what made the deepest impression. The deepest impression was that his mother was mourning, and the family was mourning for the little girl who had died. And this little girl who had died was such a lovely little person that everyone felt so harmonious with her, and they missed her so greatly. So what he did was to create a statue of an angel marching forth, you know, just going forth with her arms out like this, as though she were going off to some new fascinating adventure. And this statue gave the feeling to the bereaved family that this was the journey of that child, that that child's life did not end here on earth, but it had just begun in other dimensions that they weren't able to see. And so not only the family of the bereaved looked at that statue and found great solace in it, but everyone else did too. People who had lost children, who had lost loved ones, wives, husbands, whomever, went to that statue and festooned that statue with all the lovely flowers. In fact, the flowers just built up from the bottom of the statue right up over the feet of the little girl as she was standing up there on the statue some 3 or 4 feet high. It was a beautiful memento. And the chapter, the title of it is something about he has brought hope to these people. The hope that it describes is that he has given them a new attitude about death. That death is not the end, but it is just another beginning. Another glorious beginning in some other dimension of beingness we are not familiar with. Now that's quite a noble thing. Here this fellow felt very closely about the death of this youngster, and he created this monument which expressed his understanding of what happens, that it's a continually growing experience, not an ending, but a growing experience. And in giving this out to all of these people, he was giving it out to himself. He didn't care if anyone else looked at that statue, if anyone else got any feeling of it. He got it. To him, it meant that this was what this little girl was doing, reaching out to a new dimension of life, to a new direction. But because this fellow did it with all of his heart, being himself, many others were touched by it. Our lifestyle does not mean that we're doing it for anybody else, but it means that many will be touched by our life if we live our life according to the way we feel it is wise to live it. You look at people and the problems they have and the circumstances under which they live, and you see that's very trying. You see they have crippled bodies that they live their life with. You see they have diseases that they live their life with. You see the short life that some have and the long life that others have. And you look at the long life that others have and you see them as almost vegetables in this long life and you say, oh my God, you know. And you look at the short life of some of our beautiful composers and artists and so forth. And you say, wow, how well they used their life, and look what they produced in their life. What was Mozart, something, 35, 39 when he passed, and many another was a young person when they left too. But that's not the point. There are people who died at the age of 20, and they left a monument of their joy in music, in dancing, in any other area that they felt creatively driven, or perhaps just in talking to one another. In many hospitals, children's hospitals especially, there are usually three or four, maybe more, three or four little patients, little people there, who have changed the entire hospital because they had a valiant spirit. They loved themselves. Their lifestyle was so tremendously glorious for themselves that it changed everyone's attitude in the hospital. People, nurses, doctors, they began acting on children from a different point of view because here they had seen the glory of this one child standing out magnificent with all of their problem and with their very short life. And some of them were but babies. Some of them were yet unable to speak, were perhaps a few days, weeks, maybe a month old. How can anyone do anything in that short a time? They did. They did. They showed a valiant spirit. They showed a desire to be whole and perfect. They showed a desire to live each moment that they lived in a tremendously glorious way. And they did it. And they did it. Seneca can tell us how she would treat some of these little children. These little children who were from birth sort of tied in a knot. And then with her loving, stroking hands and her caring heart, she helped them untie that knot and be themselves. Just by massaging them, by relaxing them, by letting go of the tension that was there for whatever reason. And then, if that child were to leave that life experience, it would have left that life experience being itself, not being all tied up in a knot. They say, well, what difference does it make? 10 minutes not being tied in a knot, or being tied in a knot and dying? What difference? It makes this difference. It makes this difference. we each have our lifestyle. And our lifestyle is a lifestyle of giving. Whether you want to believe that or not, your lifestyle is one of giving. You are constantly giving of yourself to yourself. You are giving of yourself so gloriously and so wonderfully and so openly to the world in such a beautiful, fabulous manner that you don't even see it, which is good. Because Mozart, I'm sure, didn't appreciate how great a musician he was. He just let flow what was within him. Michelangelo truly never could have understood how great he was, because if he understood how great he was, he would be being great instead of, he'd be being an outwardly a great person instead of being a person who was demonstrating his genius. And you see, this is quite something. This is quite something. People who think they're so good give only a small portion. Now, Ellen reports of a high school reunion, or a reunion of children born on the same day that she was, back in 1939. And she looks at these people. She went back to a reunion, and at the reunion, she was able to look at each one, and when she realized what their name was, she realized they had not changed one little bit from what they were as students. If they were outgoing, dynamic, forceful students, they were such then. If they were A students, then they were just plain, ordinary, living on their laurels students. They didn't get out and prove it. If they were poor students who had to show themselves and prove themselves, they were the ones who were the movers in the world. They were the ones who achieved greatness as far as the world is concerned. But these people, their lifestyle was a pure representation of what they were and how they were created in their life. Now let's just take 1939 in Merzig, Germany was not a pleasant place to be. It was at the time of war. It was at the time of a great many challenges going on with Hitler and with the world of Germany and the world of Europe. It was in the throes of a great many confusions. But yet, out of that came many beautiful people who, not that they were untouched by the war, but that they were touched by the war just as they would be touched by anything else that happened in their life. They were the masters of the experience they went through. Now, you look at those people, and you see those people, and you realize the tough experiences that they went through, the limitations they went through, and yet how great they turned out. They did not have a lot of anger within them, feeling that they were given an unfair shake in life being born at that moment instead of earlier or later. They didn't feel that they weren't given an opportunity at education that their predecessors or successors had. They just went for it and did a beautiful job. And this is very true. Stefan, too, was reporting of when he went back to a high school reunion. The youngsters weren't too much older, what, 20 years older perhaps, and 10 years older, and the 10-year high school reunion. And what happens in 10 years? What happens in 15 years? Not too much. But what does happen is that you see that how the person was, how they had trained themselves in their youth, they continued on in their adult life. Because their lifestyle was a reflection of what lifestyle they took. Now, Stefan was raised by a father who was a businessman, and he wanted Stefan to do many different things. But these were not the things that Stefan wanted to do. And Stefan tried his hand at doing what his father wanted him to do. But it was not him. He continually had to go and be the free spirit that he is. He had to continually reach out beyond the boundaries of the limitations of banking and so forth that his father would have had him experience. Now, that was just something that was his nature. That was his lifestyle. Then we go to Diego, Ellen's youngster, and Diego was trained by her husband to appreciate money and to think money was great, and he always said, you know, I don't give a darn about money, you know, I don't care about the finances, I don't care about these things. And then all of a sudden, an opportunity came to him to go into banking, separate from his father. And then he says, I'm going to prove myself. I'm going to prove myself, I can't do it. You see, within his heart and soul, he really wanted to be a banker. He ran away from it for a short time, but he really wanted to be a banker. And so he prepared himself. And today he is a very excellent banker. But whereas Stefan's father encouraged him to be a banker, and that wasn't Stefan's thing, Stefan went in the direction that was his thing, what really turned him on. Diego didn't want to be a banker either, and he walked away from it, but circumstances worked out for him to be a banker, and he became a very good one. Now, is being a banker Diego's great promise, great potential, his true lifestyle? Is that what Diego really wants to be? I kind of doubt it. And I doubt it from the point of view that Diego is really more of a free spirit than this tied, staid, dramatic banker life would be. No. True, he doesn't have to demonstrate that lifestyle. He can demonstrate laissez-faire, he can demonstrate a free attitude for himself as he is a banker if he wishes. And he can still fit in the banking community. But this isn't really where his heart is. And you know why it isn't where his heart is? Because he has always been taught to be himself and have fun. He has always been taught that he is a genius. He has always been taught that he has great potential. And the moment you get into a structured institutional organization, you don't have to lose your potential. You don't have to lose your genius, but it stifles it to a certain degree because you have so many rules you have to follow and so many limitations that they put on you. And Siddhika, what happened to you? You took money that you had and you invested it when you came over here so that you could be a novitiate and it would be out of your hands for a while. And what happened to her? The money just all of a sudden got caught fire, and it grew and grew and grew and expanded and expanded and expanded, and it will keep on expanding. But you see, she didn't dream of it in that way up to this time. She didn't dream that here was a wonderful media through which her money could grow and be great and do beautiful things. She didn't realize that perhaps if her money were able to stay in there for 4 or 5 years, that she would be a millionaire. And she would. Because it just keeps growing in such a fabulous way that it is incomparable. You cannot appreciate it. And then she thinks, well, maybe I don't want to be a monk. Maybe I just want to have my expanding money and use that to grow with. But the money that she is experiencing expanding is an indication of what can happen in her consciousness if she takes her consciousness and applies it in the right field. The money is saying, look, you can give it a little here, and you can be afraid to try it, and you get 5 to 8% return, which is good. Here you can be a little less conservative and get 10 to 12% return, which is good. Here you can be a little less conservative and you can have 15 to 20%. Here a little less, you can have 25%, and there are others that you could get 50 and 100% return. But of course, those are a little more shaky type investments. They do bring in. Where are you strong enough to handle it? Are you strong enough to handle your lifestyle at the top, where it's a little shaky, where there's not too many hard roads to follow? They're all very limited paths that you have to eke your way through. That's where you are reaching the top. If the road is widely traveled and well prepared, and the lifestyles of many follow that road, then you will be a success and you will enjoy it, but you won't be the person that you are. Because the person that Stefan is, the person that Siddhika is, and believe it or not, the person that Ellen is a free spirit. A free spirit, out doing whatever pleases you, whatever makes you happy. And that's great. But for 12 years now, 13 years perhaps, Ellen has been president of the Church of God Unlimited, the University of Healing, and all of our programs here. And it has jaded her just a little bit, because she has attempted to run this in a business-like manner, with responsibility toward the people who are here, and with responsibility toward the purpose of the organization and the business. Now you say, well, Herb, don't you want her to do that? Didn't you want her to do that? And my surprising answer is, no, I didn't. What do I want any of you to do? I want you to be yourself and have fun. And if this can be a catalyst, being president can be a catalyst to being yourself, wonderful. But if being president is a ball and chain around your leg, keeping you from moving ahead and being your dynamic self, then cut the ball and chain, throw it. But if it is an opportunity for you to be a free spirit, and to do the things you want to do, and realize you're not running this organization for anything else but yourself. Anything else but yourself. You're doing it for having fun. You're doing it to have it be the greatest in the world. When I created this organization, I created it to have fun. And when I had the opportunity to go over to Europe and lecture for 6 months, I just closed the door. I had my lessons from the students coming to me, but say, that was what I wanted to do, and I did it, and I had fun. And then when I came back, I had more fun. But think, you see, this is what it is, being myself and having fun. And then when I played the game of catalyst for the rest of you, to help you to come to your own conclusions, all sorts of other things happened. But that's okay. That's okay. I have no bad feelings about any of the experiences I've had in my life. I have no bad feelings about any of the lifestyles that I have enjoyed on purpose and otherwise. I have no bad feelings about it. I am making everything I do being myself and having fun. This is our lifestyle. This is our direction of our lifestyle. It is the priority of our lifestyle, the pattern. It is the archetypal purpose of our lifestyle, is to be ourselves and have fun. You know, I say this so often, and you sometimes think, well, that's sort of irresponsible. Because being myself, I might like to go out into the kayak and paddle around in Lake Marina when I'm supposed to be doing something else. No, no, no. Not that you don't go. But you don't think that you should be. You create yourself doing it. You create yourself having these experiences. You create yourself going anywhere you want to go. You don't make it happen. You just have it in your thought. That's interesting. I think someday I'd like to go to Switzerland. 2 years later, I was in Switzerland. Took 2 years? Well, I really didn't care whether I went or not. I thought Switzerland was charming, and I'd just go. And so 2 years later, I had this request to go over there. All totally paid for, all totally harmoniously done. I talked to a woman, wasn't it 2 days ago, in the laser doctor's office, and she and her husband had gone to Europe and gone over to Germany and Switzerland and visited her son was getting married over there to a German girl, or was it the daughter or son? Son's getting married to a German girl, and beautiful girl she's in, beautiful country. But then they went to Zurich, and it was so expensive. Zurich was so expensive, so expensive. Here they are, well-to-do, harmonious people, traveling the world, going to their son's wedding in Europe, as though they were, you know, going to the next town, thinking nothing about it, and then they find Zurich expensive. Now, why did they find Zurich expensive? They found Zurich expensive because they heard Zurich was expensive. They really had not the froggiest, and I mean froggiest, idea in their mind as to what they were spending for anything. They just took their Swiss francs and gave them out for the eating or sleeping or doing whatever they were doing, and they heard that it was expensive. They heard that in Germany it was cheaper. They heard these things and they believed it. Now all they have to do is hear that everything is very inexpensive. You go to Europe and you go and do anything in Europe and it is like maybe a third of the cost of what you do here in the United States. All you gotta do is tell yourself that. And when you go over there, you will find that it's probably even only a quarter of the cost of what you do here in the United States. Because you create this experience in your life, you create this as your being. We went to Mexico, down to Tecate, and we went to the most expensive restaurant in Tecate. The most expensive, was that Don Quixote? A really fine restaurant. And we went in there and we ordered really fine food, even flambé with the flames on it and the liquor poured into the ice cream and stuff. My goodness sakes, I thought to set the restaurant on fire. But it's beautiful. And so when we came out of there, we paid nothing more than if we had been at McDonald's. It was really quite inexpensive. But we went down there with the idea, hey, we're going to have a good time. We were celebrating a birthday, and we were going to have a good time. We didn't even think about what the money was going to be. And there was no money. It wasn't much at all. I went into the car wash the other day, and the lady says, don't you want to do this and do that? I said, well, if I put that Armor All on my wheels, it'll just pick up more dust as I drive through our property up there because it's quite dusty. And she's all right, okay. So I just got a normal car wash, and as I went in, the man was sitting behind the counter, behind the woman who was running the counter, and he says, hey, he's with God Unlimited. It's free for him. And so I could have had the biggest wash in town, and it would have been free. But it didn't really matter, did it? It didn't really matter one little bit, because these are things that we put in our consciousness. What is our lifestyle? Our lifestyle is to go and enjoy, to go and be ourselves, to go and have fun. Now, we were talking this morning about the telephone, and we were saying, how do we have the telephone not ring while we're having our lecture so that it doesn't disturb us? And then the comment was made, well, we could turn down the bells. And what other possibility is there, Stefan?
Pull out the plug.
My God, what a wonderful idea! Pull out the plug. What happens when you pull out the plug? It doesn't ring, right?
Right.
It doesn't ring. Now, why didn't we think of that? Why didn't we think of that? Do you know why we didn't think of it? Because we like to hear the phone ring. We like to Have the phone demand. If somebody presses the doorbell, you have to answer that door. You know what some people do? When the doorbell rings and they don't want to answer the door, they lay down on the floor so the people can't see them through the window. Now, is this your house? Why should you be disturbed by anyone coming to your door and ringing the doorbell? But better yet, why do you create people coming and ringing the doorbell at just the time that you don't want to be disturbed? You may be watching a movie on television. You may be having a deep, wonderful discussion with the children. You may be having sex with your spouse, and you don't want to be disturbed. Did you ever have that experience, Ellen? Yes. So what do? You mentally wrap yourself in your pure white light of love as your pure lifestyle, and you are not disturbed. And then you talk to your friends the next day, and they say, I was going by your house, and I was tempted to come in, but I thought, no, another time. I was driving by your house, I was tempted to come in, but I thought, no, there's something tells me that they're doing something important right now, and I shouldn't disturb them. You know, something told me. This is our universal consciousness. This is when our lifestyle is preeminent. It goes beyond what other people want to do, because other people's lifestyle is going to be equally preeminent for them. They're going to want to do the things that they do. They're going to want to go to the places that they go. They're going to want to have the experiences that they have. You understand? Mm-hmm. You understand? But we are for ourselves. We are sacrosanct for ourselves. Now, if you walked over to a neighbor's house and you felt like ringing the neighbor's bell, and then something inside you said, let him alone. This isn't that important. I'm sure that they're right in the middle of something right now. And so the next day you say to the lady or man, you say, I was going by your house and I was going to stop in, but something said to me, no, you were right in the middle of something. Well, what time did you go by? Oh, it's about 8:30. Oh, yes. I had the winning hand at poker. And if you had come in and disturbed me at that time, I would have shot you full of lead with my eyes. You know, get out of here. Don't disturb me. I got a winning hand here, you know. Don't mess up my thing. As though a game is that important. But all of life is a game, isn't it? All of life is a game, and all we're doing is playing it. And we're playing it because it's fun. We're playing it because it's our lifestyle. It is the thing that we feel is important. Now, so often, my friends tell me they're walking the spiritual path. And I smile to myself because I know what they're doing. They're not walking the spiritual path. They're walking a path, that's true, and every path is a spiritual path. But they're not walking the path toward their inner self. They are walking a path toward having the world approve of them. And that is one of the most difficult paths you will ever take in your entire life. The most difficult path you can ever take is trying to get the world to approve of you. It won't work. The world will disapprove of you for any number of reasons. What might be a reason the world would disapprove of you? Because you're not wearing the right color dress. You're not using the right color of shoe polish. You're wearing leather pants. Or you're doing something else that disturbs you. And you see, if you do things for the world, then what happens? What happens when you do things for the world? They don't really care. They would look at you if you wore those leather pants and say, ha, look at that person wearing those leather pants. Doesn't it look silly on them? Or they might say, hey, what a masculine appearance that person has wearing those leather pants. You see what I'm saying? Whatever you think in your mind about yourself is what people think about you. Whatever you think in your mind about yourself is what people think about you. Now, what do we think in our mind about ourselves? What is our lifestyle? Is our lifestyle sort of a cockeyed lifestyle that lets other people do things? I'm going to throw this out just for the heck of it right now. The phone calls that we're probably not answering are the gardeners that we've been contacting, seeking to come and do our gardening for around the embassy. And it's just what Ellen has been sitting here eagerly waiting for. And that it's far more important than learning about lifestyles to learn about gardening. And this is something that is really getting to us right now. But can you see? If you can look at that telephone and hear it ring and say to yourself, this is my house, this is my life, this is my world. Now, just think, if Ellen were up at the pool, laying out in the sun or swimming in the pool, and didn't hear the telephone, would she know that it was ringing? Sort of like a Cohen, isn't it? Would she know the telephone was ringing if she weren't here to hear it? Would she be disturbed by the telephone ringing? Would the telephone really ring if she weren't here to hear it? Would the telephone ring if it weren't here to disturb her? And quite likely, it wouldn't. Because why should the telephone ring when there's no one there to answer it? The telephone probably only rings when there's someone there to answer it. And then that person may choose to answer it or not answer it. Interesting idea, you know? Think of this. You're creating these things. And you're creating these things as a repetition, continually coming up. Now, we've never had a telephone ring as often as we have during this lecture, because it is a part of our illustration. Now, what are you going to do about it? Can you be disturbed? Can you be upset by it? Can you have it drag you right down and say, I gotta answer it? Well, this is merely saying to you, be yourself and have fun. Say to that telephone, hey, shut up. I don't need to be disturbed by you. I don't need to have this happening. I don't need this. But you don't do that. You're saying, maybe it'll ring just as soon as the lecture is finished and I can go and answer it and find out what it's all about. But these things manipulate our life. And we create them manipulating. They manipulate our life. Can you imagine a doctor in the middle of a surgical procedure having to answer, just a minute, I got to answer the phone here. Just to hang tight there for a minute, you know. Can you imagine a mother breastfeeding a baby and then the telephone rings and on the other end of the line is some terrible information about how hard life is? And did you put the answering service on? No. So how hard life can be. And then she's having this mental negative energy going into her mind and coming out in her mother's milk for that child. You see, we are our own masters. We are our own creators. We are the only ones who matter in this world. And it doesn't matter at all. Just, what is superstition? Have you ever thought about that? Some people's lifestyle includes a great deal of superstition. What happens when a black cat walks across the road? And I don't expect you to answer me. What happens when a black cat crosses the road? What happens when you walk under a ladder? What happens when you throw salt. If you spill salt, you got to throw it over your left shoulder or right shoulder or something like that, probably left shoulder. And why? So you can put it in somebody else's eye. Yeah? Mm-hmm, sure. See, superstitions are created because people like to manipulate other people. Have you ever gone on an outing where you have gone to a camping trip and you're camping with all your buddies, and while you're camping, what is a necessity of a camping trip? What must be done around the campfire at a camping trip? Tell me, anybody. You must tell ghost stories.
Never
you must, you haven't done much camping, have you?
Yeah.
Yeah. You must tell ghost stories, especially Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts and, you know, group camping. They must tell the weirdest, terriblest, scariest story so that when you go to bed, you'll be scared silly. You'll think that this ghost is going to come in your tent. And of course, they usually have it something that is could happen to you, like a bug. And this little ant crawls into your bed. And this little ant turns in to be a vampire. And then this vampire sucks your blood out. And you got to be careful that no ants crawl into your bed, because if they do, they're the kind that turn into vampires. And you see, young and old, minds that are, you know, just a little sensitive to being out in the woods, perhaps alone for the first time. After the first time, you get good at telling stories too. But this is all part of the game. It's all part of this lifestyle that we're leading for ourselves. Are we going to allow these things to terrorize us? And yes, we are. We love it. We love it. What is it that you're supposed to do when you're on camping trips? What is it you're supposed to do when you're on initiation rites, where you're going into a fraternity or something like that, and you have to wear girls' clothes around the campus for the day, you know? And you think, how silly, how stupid. But if you just say, hey, that's just part of the game. Think nothing of it, and after it's over, think nothing of it. You're a master, untouched. But if you're touched and you think that the... Be careful, by the way, because every ant that crawls into your bed is going to turn into a vampire. And you want to be very careful. You don't let ants get into your beds. Because if they get in your beds, oh boy, you're going to have that blood sucked right out of you, and you become a vampire. You know, that's what happens. You become a vampire whenever a vampire sucks blood out of you. And they seem to make you that. Now, isn't that fascinating? Isn't that thrilling? And then the horror stories and through the woods with a clump, clump, clump. You see, all of these things are just lifestyles. They're programs that we have. And they teach us to be untouched by it or to be afraid of it all of our life. Ever since I was a child, when they first told me the first ghost story, I hate to sleep alone. I never want to sleep alone. I got to sleep with somebody. Even my dog will do, you know. I got to sleep with somebody. And this is a lot of people saying, why do you think people have so many pets? Because somewhere in their lifestyle program was put the idea that they couldn't sleep alone. And I'm not kidding. And what kind of pet could they also have?
A snake.
A snake. A boa constrictor. They can really make you feel tight too. But even a boa constrictor. And well, we were at this laser doctor's office. We had many interesting experiences there. The one doctor, wasn't the doctor? He had the boa constrictor himself. And he was supposed to make his patients feel good. Boy, oh boy. I told his patients, now, if you don't cooperate, I'm going to put my boa constrictor out for you. But they need this. They need this. They create this as a lifestyle for themselves. They create this as a limitation for themselves. And as they create this for a limitation for themselves, what are they doing? They are creating themselves not free. They are creating themselves bound. Bound by all of the ideas that would hold them and that would keep them from being free spirits. Diego came, Ellen's son Diego came to campus one year, and he was doing just fine, and he really wanted to be on campus. He wanted to be with us on campus, because he could have gone to town right away, but he wanted to be with us on campus. But he didn't want to take the course. And part of the rule that we had established was anyone who was on campus for any length of time had to be a student. That's the purpose of the campus. But, of course, if it's some mother's child who is a student, that was a little different. But we still encouraged him to be a student. So he quit. And he went to town. And he found a wonderful place to live. And in no time at all, he was doing great. He was speaking English. He was in a harmonious relationship with the people that he was with. And everything was going along just fine. And then the bubble broke, and he went back home. immediately he fell back into his old ways of being a Swiss Italian, of being a normal person, of being not too outgoing, but being a friendly guy, but just not as dynamic as he was when he was living in Ocean Beach. He was just a totally different person there. He was a totally different person because it encouraged him to let go of all the limitations he had. It encouraged him to forget his mother. It encouraged him to go out on the beach and do all these things and meet these people and not be afraid that he couldn't speak enough English because they found him charming. And he was a very charming person, as he still is. But the thing is, we run away from those opportunities because we know we're supposed to be responsible. When Francesca was here with us, she was doing just beautifully. She was just having the time of her life. She couldn't wait until she could drive. I think she was 14 at the time or something. She just couldn't wait until... And then while she was here, she went to a language school to learn languages, and she was doing wonderfully. But then her parents decided, that's enough, come home. And when she went home, she went into the doldrums. She became an ordinary girl, sort of pushed down. And then, after a short period of being an ordinary girl, she remembered the lifestyle she had in America. She remembered the dynamics of what it was like to be a free spirit and be with these people who were all doing their own thing in a very small area. And she says, I'm going to do my own thing. And she went and did it. And today she's just fabulous. Just a fabulous interpreter. She's so good, in fact, she isn't even available to us. But that's beautiful. That's beautiful. But the opportunity for her to fall back and stay back was there. To stay in the lifestyle she knew as a youngster. But the lifestyle she had for the few years that she was with us, or a year, was so strong, and it told her that this was her real nature. She let go and entered into it. Now, what is your lifestyle? What is your lifestyle that you're going to lead, or you are leading right now? Are you being true to yourself? Are you really doing that which makes you the happiest? Are you really interested in finding that river of light, that river of divinity that's within you, and let it be the fantastic person you are? Are you really? Is that really what you want to do? If it's what you want to do, then take all the outer experiences that you have and enjoy them, but don't be possessed by them. Enjoy them, but don't feel that they are going to lead you to your inner light. The only thing that's going to lead you to your inner light is your own inner awareness. Your own inner awareness, which says, here I am. If you expect anything to lead you to your inner light other than your own inner awareness, you will be very mistaken. But when you let go and let the divine in you burst forth like a dam that it is, the divine in you is held in check by this great dam that will not let it out because you have said, I'm not ready yet. But the moment you open the floodgates, the moment you release it, it will be a never-ending flood of divine quality zooming out of you, zooming out of you. You are the source. You are the essence. And you will have so much fun. You will have so many wonderful experiences. You'll be doing so many dynamically glorious things. Yes, you will. And you will just say, why didn't I do this sooner? And the reason you didn't do it sooner was because you had a preconceived idea of what it was going to be like. But the moment that you find this floodgate within you, and you open it. Don't open it gently. Open it totally, because the flow will never stop. The flow will keep growing and growing and growing, and your lifestyle will be what it really is, being yourself and having fun. And because this is the divine outgoing, it doesn't mean that your body is limited. It doesn't mean that you cannot have relationships. It doesn't mean that you cannot have friends. It doesn't mean that you cannot have enjoyment of food or dancing or flying or swimming or skiing or doing anything. It doesn't mean that you can't have the magnificence of writing or painting or sculpting or doing anything else that you want. It doesn't mean that you aren't aware of all the music in the universe and living in the presence of that music in everything that you are. When you live the lifestyle, which is your reality, that which comes from within you, you are so filled with peace and power and glory. You don't want anything, because every thought you think is what you're now experiencing. You don't think to want something, you think to enjoy it. You don't think for something to come later, you think for something to be now, since there only is the now. First person, present tense, positive. That's all there is. That's all there is in the entire universe, is the now. And this is who you are. And this is your lifestyle. This is your goal and your direction and your purpose and your plan in life. This is why you're so wonderful. You look at my life and you say, Herb, you sure have it easy. Sure, I do. Every time I turn around, everything works out just the way I planned it. Some things take different turns to them, different expectations of them. Sometimes my reputation is on the line. Sometimes my life is on the line. Sometimes my attitudes are on the line. But I'm always there first. And I'm always standing up and saying, this is who I am. People didn't like Jesus. We think because the Bible is written about Jesus in the New Testament that everybody liked him. People didn't like Jesus. People didn't believe in him. If they believed in him, they would have followed him. The 5,000 who came, and the 5,000 who came again, and the many who came to hear him speak. How many of them followed him? How many of them lived what he taught? He did his own thing. And do you think Jesus was happy? When he was on the cross, he said, my God, for this have I been prepared. He knew it. He knew it. And as he could put the centurion's ear back on when Peter cut it off, he could have kept his body immune from any feeling on the cross if he chose. And the same goes for Buddha. Buddha knew bliss. He didn't have to die of ptomaine poisoning later in life, bad food. He didn't have to. It was just a way of going. The Sufi masters who were up in the mountains of India, in the Himalayas there, when the Russians came along and looked for them, they could have just disappeared in the rock. They did it all the time. And the Russians called them out and said, we're going to kill you. And so they all came out. Russians would have never known if half stayed in, half came out. Doesn't matter, Russians, Chinese, Americans, doesn't matter what name you put to it. But these people shot them. And they were dead. But were they dead?
No.
The Russians didn't bury them. They just went away and left them. Machine guns fooled them, just cut them in half, cut them in shreds. You see, none of that's important. None of that's important. You live your life beautifully. You never die. You may take off one coat and leave it behind, if you want to call that death, leaving your body behind and assuming a different body. But you're assuming different bodies all the time. You're always assuming different bodies, but you don't want to admit it, because your body is constantly changing. Your body is constantly readjusting itself to your new attitude for yourself. Whether you have it done with pills or with surgery or with your physical natural outflow of the cells of your body, or however you do it, with growth from a little child. Look at Janessa. She's just a little handful in Greg's hand, you know, just a little handful of a person. And give her a few years and she will be a grand handful of a person. She'll be a grand lady. Now, how did that happen? Was she always a grand lady? Was she always wonderful? You see, our lifestyle doesn't make any difference. So we may as well choose a lifestyle that represents what we really are. Be yourself and have fun. Be your divine self and have fun. Be your glorious self and have fun. Go dance in the sunbeams. Sing to the moon at night. Stand out there in the freezing cold weather and sing to the moon and say, "Moon, you're glorious, you're wonderful," and be bathed in its warmth and glow, and you will not feel one bit of cold. When I went to Minneapolis that time to be the minister of the church, I had this beautiful building to live in and beautiful grounds, and there's nobody around. I was totally alone. I wasn't being an exhibitionist for anything, but I went outside naked and I laid in the snowdrift, 20 below zero, in the snowdrift, naked. And I made a snow angel, making my arms up and down, my legs up and down, wiggling my head. And I thought to myself, what if something happened and I froze to death out here? And they came and they saw, what would they think? But short-lived, I went inside and I took a beautiful steam bath and I felt magnificent. And the next day I gave a talk that knocked their socks off. Everybody just stood up and cheered. They filled the church. It was a glorious service, a Christmas service in cold, 56 degree wind chill below zero, cold. And the church was full. And we had a ball. And I was myself and I was having fun. And I didn't care. All I did was be who I was. You be who you are. It's so much, much fun. It's so nice. You're wonderful. I love you.